Welcome, everyone, to our World Peace Diet Circle call for the third Thursday of July, 2016. This is July 21st. And thank you so much for joining us. This is Dr. Will Tuttle calling you and talking. And we have a wonderful opportunity, I think, this evening to share some of the ideas that are underlying the dilemma that we're facing in our world today of not only human violence against animals, but also human violence against each other. And we'll be joined soon with Marlene Nero, who is a World Peace Diet facilitator, and I'll introduce her in a few minutes. And it's great just to know that you're all on the call together that we're sharing. And so, as we usually do, I'd like to take just a minute or two before we dive into the actual main time that we have together, and just take a moment and connect with each other. So let's just take a moment and feel our connection at the heart that we have with each other. This is a call that's really open to people who are World Peace Diet facilitators, World Peace Diet circle members, people who are working to help bring the vegan message of compassion and inclusion and awareness and freedom to our world through education and through advocacy and through embodying the principles underlying what veganism is, which is kindness and compassion and justice for all beings. So we give thanks for each other and for the aspiration in our heart to awaken to a higher level of understanding, and we give thanks for the animals on this beautiful planet who in many ways are bearing the full fury of our refusal to see them as beings and see them only as things, as objects to be used. And we give thanks to the ecosystems of this beautiful earth, to all the other people on the earth right now who are also striving to help birth a new world that's more conscious and aware, those who have gone before us and those who are yet to come, and all the beings who perhaps we're not aware of that are also contributing their energy and influence and loving support to this effort that is being made here on planet Earth to transcend the old delusions of domination and exploitation and oppression and commodification of life, and to be part of an awakening on planet Earth of human consciousness. We give thanks knowing that this awakening of human consciousness is spreading, that the momentum is building, that an increasing number of people are making an effort to understand the consequences of our food choices, and that as we, each one of us, make our own effort, we're planting seeds of kindness, and we're also sending out ripples, and that everyone we touch will become a new force that will send out more ripples, and each one of those people will become a force for sending out even more ripples. And so that's how the message is spreading. It's from heart to heart in a grassroots movement that touches our brothers and sisters in ways that we can let go of this tightly clenched fist that we have on the throats of so many non-human animals and allow them to live their lives, to let go of the old delusions of domination of humans over animals, males over females, and so many other false dualisms. So thanks to all of you for joining us. And we can move forward now and give thanks for this time we have. And I'll be sharing a few ideas throughout the evening that I'm hoping to be able to cover some of the new developments that have been happening in the whole world of vegan living and animal advocacy, and it really touches every aspect of our lives. We could talk literally about virtually everything, but I think, of course, the whole idea is to focus on the effect that our mentality of agriculture has on us and how we can transform that. So I'll be sharing some of those thoughts and feelings and ideas and inspirations that have been coming to me over the past month. And we also, as I said earlier, have a wonderful guest, Marlene Nero. And I met Marlene quite a few years ago, and that was in Massachusetts, which is where she's from, and I am now in Massachusetts. Madeline is also here in spirit. She's left recently to go over to Switzerland to be with her mother for a few weeks, who's in her late 90s now, and it's quite a challenging time for Madeline just because I think, it's for the first time her mother seems to be actually transitioning. So it's always, I think, good to remember that our lives on this earth are like blossoms. You know, they flower forth for a while, and they don't go on forever. And so that gives us, I think, a sense of the preciousness of our human life. And I've always felt that in my relationship with Marlene, because I've always sensed in Marlene a real passion for justice, for love and kindness and caring that she brings to our movement. And she's also, as I think all of us are aware of, she's the founder of the Vegan Nation radio show, which is every week on Fridays. And she conducts it from Worcester, Massachusetts. I'm heading for Worcester tomorrow, actually, driving over first through Connecticut and then up to Worcester to speak there over the weekend. So we'll be seeing Marlene, and I'll be seeing her on Monday, too, to go into the recording studio. And so I'm going to go ahead and thank Marlene so much for joining us, and I'm going to unmute your phone here now, and I think I just did it. Can you hear me okay, and let's see if we can hear you.
Yes, thank you, Will.
All right. Yep, that's Marlene. Hi. And I also want to remind everybody that all of us can press *6 on your phone if you would like to contribute to the conversation, if you'd like to ask a question or make a statement or comment. Just press *6, and then I'll be able to see that here on the whatever this is, this kind of dashboard that I have, so I can see people. So, Marlene, thanks so much for being with us here this evening. And I was wondering if you could talk to us a little bit about your path and your practice of veganism, and what got you into having your own radio show, because that's something that not many people actually ever do, and if they do, stick with it as long as you have. So can you talk to us a little bit about your experience and how that led to this, and what you've actually maybe even go into a little bit, what you've learned from it, but maybe just what led up to it would be just great to hear.
Thank you, Will, and thank you, everyone. I'm very honored and grateful to be with you. And, Will, how is the volume with my voice?
Yeah, it sounds good. Yep, very good. Perfect.
Okay. Yes. Well, I believe in what you are saying about intuition. Primarily, it's intuition, and about honoring those who have come before us and those who are going to go after us. And so I'm hoping to inspire many of our members and those on the call to also become a radio host to spread the vegan message.
Wow.
And how it began for me was first becoming a World Peace Diet facilitator, gaining that knowledge. And then the good news is, out of frustration, out of the angry vegan comes activism, so we can transform out of that stage. And how this originally started was, I had written a letter to the editor in my local daily paper, which is a very conservative paper in Worcester. And I was just received a lot of negative feedback from so many Worcester residents. And it was just overwhelming. And I had pleaded with the other World Peace Diet facilitators on our circle to say, hey, can anybody write in? Because, there's no other vegans and I need support here. And that actually was the inspiration from Tara to start World Peace Writers, the writers group that you and Madeline is called, worldpeacewriters.org. And so that allowed me to be my outlet, to express myself in writing rather than trying to work through, like what you have said, if plant the seed and move on. So I was able to let go of that. So becoming the World Peace Writer and writing those articles gave me more knowledge and more confidence, which then led to this radio station. And so what happened was I was simply driving by the radio station, which this is community radio. So I'd like to emphasize to everyone, to all the other World Peace Diet facilitators, I suggest contacting community radio stations. So there's commercial and there's public and there's community. Community radio, there's 200 community radio stations in the United States, and they are worldwide in every country. And they are nonprofit, they're independent, non-commercial, and listener-supported. So then we have freedom, and it's open to everyone and the diversity to express ourselves. So I think that's where we have the best opportunity to spread the vegan message. So I was driving by this radio station on my way to work, and an intuition came over me to stop, and I was had the radio station on in my truck, and it was saying, hey, there's an opportunity for world music, anyone who has world music. And I thought, well, there's a lot of vegan music that I never hear, of course, on any radio station. Why don't I see if they'll be open to it? And so that's actually, I just came in, but I would not have done that had I not been a World Peace Diet facilitator or world, in the second phase for me was the World Peace Writers, to have that knowledge and that confidence behind me and the connection with all the other vegans and what's going on in the world, as well as all the music. And so I came in, and the director, Troy Tyree, accepted my offer, and then I ended up with this half-hour radio news show every week, which is a true blessing because I had no radio experience prior. So it was trusting.
Right.
Yeah, learning, you know, learning what to do and going from there. So this show, Vegan Nation, which, as you said, airs every Friday, 12:30 to 1 p.m. Eastern Time, and it's on 91.3 FM, which is Central Massachusetts on the radio waves. And then it's online at wcuw.org, and then all shows are archived at wcuw.org/Vegan Nation, which includes the 52 shows from last year and now 30 this year. And what I have, so it's been great. And so I do want to get into highlighting some of the guests that's been on Vegan Nation, and I want to go over some of the things that I have learned.
Right, yeah, because that's, you know, that's very impressive. You've already done 82 shows. That's really a lot of information, a lot of ripples that you're spreading into the pond there, Marlene. Is every radio show that you're doing, you're touching people, and you're also adding to your own knowledge as well, I'm sure. So that's going to be a very enriching experience.
Yes, it certainly is. So what I have learned from it is, one, to have hope and faith. And because I am now with this show able to learn about all the vegan activists going on in the world, like you know as well, but without knowing that, I would be a little disappointed and depressed, thinking, oh, my God, how much longer is this going to take for veganism to circulate? And yet when I'm communicating with all these other vegan activists, I realize there is a lot going on in the world. So it really gives me hope and faith. And you had mentioned this with you and Madeline a couple of weeks ago, how I think it was a pond you were looking at, and you saw how much activity was going on with bugs that doesn't seem like anything's happening, but when you really look, you see how much is happening. Do you remember that?
Yes.
Yeah. That's how I feel about it, because when I'm walking about in my 3D life, I think, well, there's nothing vegan happening here in my little town. I live out in the country a little ways from Worcester, yet really there's a lot going on. So to keep that in mind, that there is a lot going on. And then the second item that I want to share is the confidence, and that to keep in mind what is the goal. And so the goal is to spread the vegan message. And so whenever I worry about, oh, I didn't sound right, or, you know, I didn't edit that correctly, and there was a skip, I think, that doesn't matter at all. What matters is the vegan message. and to trust with divine timing that I really do believe a lot of this is divinely guided. That's been my experience. There's been so many miraculous synchronistic things happen that it has really showed me that it has. And to be true to ourselves of how we are in our activism. And so there's many ways to be an activist. And for me, I do have a warrior spirit. And so sometimes I feel like, oh, I'm bold, or, you know, how's someone going to take this? And I think I just got to say it the way it comes out of me. And so to keep that in mind. And for me, I had a very strong intuitive message actually before the radio show. And it happened after World Peace Diet facilitated training as I was transitioning to work more with more time in World Peace Writers, was to motivate the girls and women. And
wow.
So it came strong. So I thought, okay, so I really keep a lot of that feminist focus because I feel like that's my mission. That's my little piece of the pie to motivate the girls and women.
Mm-hmm.
Another thing that I have learned is to let go and just focus on one thing at a time, one show at a time, because there's so many vegan activists, and I think, oh, how am I going to get everybody in? And it's like, just focus. And so my focus is for you, because your show is your interview when you're coming in for the studio will be airing on July 29th, this Friday. So it's like, okay, just focus on Will's interview, and the others will fall into place after that. So that's been really helpful for me, let go. And
right.
The last thing I want to say about what I have learned, I thought a lot about what you have said about the angry vegan and going into the active vegan, and once we can get through that stage. And so in, you know, seeing and feeling and experiencing and knowing, witnessing how much suffering is going on in the world to the animals, the non-human animals, which from your training I've learned about the boomerang effect, so all the suffering of the people, and it's overwhelming. And I think, oh, how come so many people aren't being vegan once they know? And then I just keep in mind that the gate to this awareness is a narrow gate. And not everybody can fit through at the same time. For whatever reason, it's a narrow gate. And so I just keep that in mind. And so it's a long line, like I think a bank line or a line in traffic. But as long as the line keeps moving, that's what's important. So, yes, not everyone's going to get through at the same time. But as long as we just keep active and doing what our role is to keep that line moving. And so that has helped me to have patience. And I think of that, too, like when I'm filling up a glass of water. And if I have the faucet on full blast, the water just goes all over and doesn't even get in the glass. I think, okay, not everyone can enter at the same time. But if I have it at a slow speed, the glass gets full. And so, therefore, there is success. So that's been helpful to me.
Thank you for sharing that that idea. You know, I love how your name is Marlene Narrow. You're the narrow gate yourself. The way people can come through, and you know, you're opening a doorway for people. That's really what you're doing, and it's beautiful to see. That's really great. Wow.
Thanks. And that was a transformation for me too, because I thought, oh, you know, with the name Narrow. I do joke that saying, well, my name is Narrow, like a narrow road, not a narrow mind. But, of course, narrow-minded is very common usage. So I think I have to transform that. And when I thought about the narrow gate, I thought, yes, there it is. That helps me to understand why it's such a slow process for the vegan revolution to be more mainstream and universally accepted and practiced by everyone right away.
Yeah, so your vision, in a way, is that the people who are not yet vegan, pre-vegan people are, they're not all going through at once. They're going through when they're ready. It's like a ripening process. So it's kind of a narrow gate in the sense that they go through 1, 2, 3, 4, 2, 1, you know, just like that. And each one, in a sense, has to have their own authentic experience to go through the gate. And you can't really rush them or force them. I think there's a feeling we want to just, you know, dump everybody through all at once, and yet it seems like the harder we try to do that, maybe it backfires in a way. We get more impatient, and we get, you know, start to bully people in a sense. Come on, don't you know what you're doing? And we get angry, and maybe that just, is that what you're saying? It kind of slows things down. We shouldn't try in that way.
Yeah. Yes. And I would like to next mention some of the highlights of the guests who have been on Vegan Nation.
Yes.
However, before I do that, I just wanted to say one more thing about honoring the people who have come before. And I like that you have mentioned that a lot in your writings about the totality of the experience that we have and how it is dependent on who come before. And so I want to give credit to WCUW Community Radio, the staff here who has been very supportive of me in all aspects, the director, Troy Tyree, which without him, there would be no Vegan Nation. And also that WCUW as a community radio station started in 1920. And it started with Clark University, and that's why it's WCUW, CU Clark University Worcester, WCUW. And radio stations on the East Coast are W, such as WCUW,
right.
And radio stations on the West Coast are K, like KFPT or something like that. But with this radio station, in addition to starting in 1920, in 1966, so this is the 50th year anniversary, the programmers went down to Washington, D.C. to an anti-Vietnam protest and broadcast the protest live. And so this has always been a radio station that has been about consciousness raising. And so I thought that was pretty significant because your tour is in Vietnam in November. And this is the World Peace
Right.
Diet. Right. Yeah, so I always think that this is a missing piece, veganism. That's why we're still at war, and that's why we still have so many crises and racism and sexism and all the other isms and problems, because the missing piece has been the hurting culture. And so we need veganism to really bring justice and peace. So the guest I would like to share, is this okay to continue on?
Yeah, I think it's very interesting. Yeah. Tell us some of the highlights, people you've worked with.
Well, you are a very big highlight, and your three interviews that were in 2015 are in the archives. And again, the archives are wcuw.org/vegannation. And of course, your upcoming interview this Friday the 29th. Actually, tomorrow is Sandra Higgins from Ireland.
Wonderful.
She's on tomorrow for part two. Yes, for part two. So the other World Peace Diet facilitators that I have had guests on Vegan Nation, and that's Kip Anderson, the creator of Cowspiracy, and also his new movie, what is it? His new movie.
What the Health.
What the Health. Yes. Yep. And then Sven and Andy in South Africa, Michael Landfield in Canada, Veronique Perot in France, Sandra Higgins, who was my guest in 2015 with her Go Vegan Ireland campaign, and then she's on tomorrow, and she was on last week for her Go Vegan World international advertising campaign, Joanna Blad in Las Vegas, Nevada, Mark Stroud and Anna Ferguson, and, of course, wonderful Lily Macy and Judy Carmen, and then also Martin Rowe, who published World Peace Diet. And Casey Taft, who is the publisher of Circles of Compassion, Vegan Publishing, which is located here in Massachusetts.
Right.
And then other highlighted guests. I love all of my guests, and I appreciate everyone, so I don't want to give anyone more credit than another. I just wanted to mention that these are the World Peace Diet facilitators. And also Scott from Germany, he was on, and Susan Enlich in Berkeley, California. And then Clifton Roberts, who's the vegan U.S. presidential candidate with the Humane Party. He's been on four times now. And then Renee King Sonnen, Rowdy Girl Sanctuary. She's also in the movie. Right, the movie,
Vegan
Everyday Stories.
Vegan Everyday Stories, right. Yes, wonderful.
Which I'm excited that we're going to be showing that here at WCUW on August 11th, and that you're going to be here since you're in the movie, and you'll be introducing the movie, and then with question and answer period after. Thank you, Will.
Right. Yeah, that should be great. Right. Yeah. Wow. Any other ones, or is that it?
There's the 82, right. So I just wanted to highlight those who were the World Peace Diet facilitators, then, of course, Clifton, running for president, Renee, who's in the movie with you.
Right.
And also, the last thing I wanted to share as far as what I've learned as far as radio, and with spreading the vegan message is repetition. And prior to learning this role as a radio host, I would think, oh, if I repeat myself, that's, you know, redundancy. And but it's very important to say again, like, Vegan Nation is Fridays, 12:30 to 1 p.m. Eastern Time. You can listen online at WCUW.org and repeat things quite a bit, even in a half-hour show. So those are my tips to give. And the last thing I'd like to say is I'm really happy to be able to include songs. So I can only include a snippet of a song or one full song in a half-hour show. And so I've been very fortunate and happy to include many of your songs from your albums Inspiration, Animal Songs, and Islands of Light, as well as the songs by Vegan Smythe and Daniel Redwood, Joy Askew, and even Diesel, who's a rap singer who has great vegan songs. So that's what I wanted to share. Thank you, Will, and everyone for listening.
Thanks, Marlene. It's been really interesting. And press star 6 if you would like to raise your hand and ask any question or make any comment. I think my only, you know, this has been really interesting. I don't want to go on and on, you know, too long, but it's a great contribution to the vegan movement, what you're doing, to, from my perspective, because you're really reaching out into the community, and you have a consistent presence, a consistent voice, and you never know who's going to be turning the radio on and listening, as Lily knows, as we all know. And I think the thing that some people might be wondering, maybe I'll just ask the question. The way you did it was by following your intuition and just going into the station, but you had that confidence, and there was a community radio station here, and so you've been able to learn the technical aspects. Is there anything that you think people, like, you know, we're all in different situations, but the people who are listening to this call who may be interested in thinking about doing something through radio and or local media, would be good to be aware of. You know, you may or may not be knowledgeable about other types of radio. I know some people get involved with trying to bring a message, a vegan message to the radio through radio, and they find that they have to get sponsors or they have to raise money. Or they find that maybe they get interrupted all the time by ads or whatever. How is it working for you in those regards? And do you have any thoughts about, you know, just strategies that people might be able to use or just things people should be aware of on a kind of practical level if they want to actually go out in their community and start or make a radio presence for themselves? Anything you'd like to say about that?
Yes. I know there's a lot of internet radio, so that is an option. So that's really great. That allows people
right.
to be able to broadcast, yes. And for those, I don't have any experience with commercials, so I really can't say anything about it. And I have to say, when I listen to public radio, I see almost the same news as commercial radio. And I really only see true news, like vegan news, on community radio stations. So I don't
yes.
know about the public radios, yeah. What I would say is, to contact a community radio station and volunteer. And when I came in the door, I really didn't expect to be able to receive the show. So I was ready to, you know, dust old record albums or, you know, vacuum the floor or whatever, because community radio was volunteers. And so I was ready to help out, which, of course, I do other things here, too, also to help out, but to do whatever to help out with community radio in that, to learn the technology end, I had no experience with it, and the volunteers, many people who are involved in community radio have been involved in community radio for decades, so they have a lot of experience with the boards and how to work the technology, and they love to help the newbies. And so that, so I wouldn't let that, hinder anyone who's thinking, well, I don't have experience. I didn't have any experience either, and so everyone's helpful to teach the newbies.
Wow.
So that's, yeah, so that's what I'd like to say is just go for it.
Right. Well, good for you. You've really done such a wonderful job with spreading the vegan message on Vegan Nation. And I think it's one of the things I really like is that everything's archived. So even if people are not able to listen right at that moment on Friday, they can go a little bit later in the day or the next day and listen, and you have everything there for people. Is there any advantage to listening to it live? Can people call in from anywhere, or is it just being listening live, you're getting the freshness.
Yeah, the freshness. My show is not, all the shows of Vegan Nation are pre-recorded, so no
right.
one can call in. Yeah, so you could set up a live show. That wasn't an option for me, and I'm fine with that. So if that is, then people can call in. So, yes, it's really
right.
great that the shows are live. Yeah, I like that.
Right. Great. All right. Well, I don't see anybody at this point pressing *6. So I think if anybody, you know, sometimes for some reason it comes in a little bit later. But we'll go ahead and I think sign off now unless there's any last minute things you want to say. Do you want to talk at all about any other things you do to help promote vegan living? Because I know you're quite active in the various communities, and I think you even have some animals you're taking care of. Do you want to say anything about those things?
Yes. The animals are so wonderful, as you know, and they really help me keep the faith and keep moving on because they are individuals. They are persons, and to be with them is really helpful. And, yes, I have rescued animals, and four of them are bovines, which are cows. Two are males and two are females, three
wow.
from the dairy industry, one from the, quote, beef industry. I don't mean to use those terms, but you know what I mean. And
right.
Two pigs, yes, and horses, also horses who have been rescued. And they've all come to me in different situations, and so I feel like that's the message for me personally. If there is someone who comes to me, that's it. I'm meant to help them, and it's worked out. And so it's just beautiful, absolutely beautiful. They're gentle, they're loving, they're thoughtful, they're nonviolent. They care about people, they care about each other, they care about other animals, they communicate. So that's been really, really wonderful. And, yes, I love also showing movies. And so I think that's really great for being an activist to show movies in community. Peaceful Kingdom, I showed that at the local library, so it's really great. And of course we have the Vegan Everyday Stories coming up on August 11th, so I'm really happy that you'll be here for that, so that's really exciting as well. So I just want to stress to trust your intuition and have confidence to spread
great.
The vegan message. It's wonderful.
Thank you. Thanks so much, Marlene. Great. That was really a beautiful interview to hear your story. I'm going to say a couple of words about what Marlene said, and if anyone wants to ask a question, we could certainly have Marlene come back on again. But I loved how she just emphasized the idea of the power of community radio, that public radio and commercial radio are pretty much the same thing nowadays. The public radio gets funding from large corporations, just like commercial radio. So it's very hard to get much of a voice anymore. It's possible. I sometimes do interviews on public radio and even on commercial radio through minor miracles that local activists are working to be able to have a vegan show on commercial or on public radio, but most of them seem to be on community radio where it's really much more free, and there's a sense of the roots are in social justice, the roots are in the peace movement and various liberation movements, and veganism, of course, goes right along with that and fits in completely well, actually. Although some people don't realize that if they're still eating animal foods, they think that it sounds a little bit too controversial. But I think as people learn more and more about it, they realize that this is the foundation for social justice and for freedom and for peace and for sustainability. And then the other thing, when you mentioned, Marlene, that you have some bovines and some pigs and horses living with you there on the land where you live, and it reminded me when I was recently visiting Sandra Higgins, who's going to be on tomorrow's show in Ireland at her sanctuary, and she never calls the animals on her sanctuary. She has quite a few. She has, I don't know how many, probably over 100. She never calls them animals. She always calls them people. She said, I'm going to go see the people. And she said, they are people. They're people. They're just as much people as you and I are. Every one of them is a person. And they all have their personalities, and they're such wonderful people. And she says, the only reason I can do this work I'm doing is because of these people that I'm living with, you know, the chicken people and the cows and the sheep and the goats and turkeys. And I went around with her. She tended to the needs of many of the different people that were on her, that live with her there. And I could really feel into this relationship and how, you know, Sandra Higgins has emerged in many ways as one of the most powerful forces for veganism. It's just amazing what she's accomplishing out of her, you know, her house. I mean, gosh, you could see this house is completely falling down around her. It's a beautiful old house in Ireland, but it's just, you know, I shouldn't maybe say that, but it needs a lot of work, and it's livable, but but she doesn't have an office. She just kind of works out of her bedroom, and yet she's got this, you know, these huge campaigns, that are bringing vegan billboards and, messages on buses and trains and, you know, over urinals and college dormitories, you know, I mean, just all over Ireland. I went to England. She's coming here to the United States with a whole big campaign, bringing the vegan message in a very, very thoughtful way. You know, it's, she uses the word vegan, and she does it from the point of view of seeing the animals as individuals. And so her posters and billboards are designed by vegans to really be, I think, both impactful, but also uncompromising and also accessible. They're great. You know, if you just go and check her the website that she's got up for the it's actually on the resources for this month. It's the Go Vegan World campaign, and you can just check that out on the website. And they say behind every great man is a great woman, but maybe behind every great woman is a great animal. propelling the message somehow through us, inspiring us. I think really in many ways other animals, Sandra also uses that term quite a bit, you know, other animals can really inspire us, I think, with their qualities of loyalty and integrity and honesty and just being themselves and living the truth that they are. So thanks so much, Marlene, for contributing to our show this evening, or not really a show, but our conversation. So please press *6 if you have any questions or comments or concerns. That's part of the whole point of having our third Thursday time. And I did have a couple of requests from people to discuss a couple of things, so I'll go ahead and do that. There's a request to discuss this new a couple of different things, but one is the new kind of a controversy, I guess, surrounding the word vegan. And there's a website. Gosh, I should have it here. I don't know if I do. There's a website that is about the Vegan Society in London, and it's vegansociety.today. That's it. Yeah, Vegan Society Today. VeganSociety.today. And so basically, we don't really know who they are, but it says, we are an international think tank comprised of renowned vegan educators, authors, activists, and practitioners. And basically, the thrust of the website is to sort of reduce the idea, I guess, that the word vegan was coined by Donald Watson only to connote liberation of animals and rights for animals, and that he was also very much motivated by, you know, increasing the health of human beings, and that aspect of the definition was never really in the awareness of the public, and that it was sort of kept out on purpose by people who came after Donald Watson. So I'm not really sure if this whole website is true. They do have pretty extensive documentation of some of the original writings from the Vegan Society in England from various times. I did send an email to a fellow when I was in England recently. I toured the Vegan Society headquarters, and I met a couple of people there, the editor of their magazine, and one of their primary outreach people. And I sent him actually an email and asked him what he thought about Vegan Society today, and he didn't respond. So they maybe don't want to, you know, get involved in saying something for or against. But I did notice there seems to be some inconsistencies. Like they say that the Vegan Society is just barely limping along, and it doesn't really have any influence or anything like that. And that is really not true. I mean, the Vegan Society in England is, I went to their headquarters, it's booming. I mean, it's really doing very well, especially the last couple of years. They've hired a lot of people, and they have a very strong and enthusiastic donor base, and a lot of different programs, educational programs that they're doing. So I don't really think that is accurate when they say that. And they try to make the point that when the Vegan Society emphasized animal rights, then they kind of shrunk. And when they switched over and they emphasized more health, and they grew and everybody liked them. And this is a video you can see by Jeff Nelson, who talks about all this. So personally, I'm not completely convinced about all that. I think there may be a grain of truth in it, because I think there are, there is this tension in the whole movement between those who go vegan because of their health, and they are very, like Jeff Nelson, I think, is a good example. He's just very sort of bugged that people say that they don't do it for health, they do it for the animals or for ethical reasons or whatever, and that they have this sense of superiority because we're doing it for ethics and other people are sort of at the lower level doing it just for health. And he really doesn't like that. And he's, I think he does have a certain point where there's this whole thing of, I'm more vegan than you are. And there's a great song, actually. You have a chance to see it. I don't have a link for it here, but it's easy to find. If you go to one of my absolute, probably my very favorite, actually, vegan songwriter is Vegan Smythe, S-M-Y-T-H-E. He has a YouTube channel, Vegan Smythe. He lives in Melbourne, Australia, and he has some beautiful songs, really. Most of them are funny. Some of them are really heart-touching, but he has one of his newer ones. It's him and another vegan musician who are doing this sort of mock competition about, I'm more vegan than you are, I'm more vegan than you are. I'm so vegan, I won't even eat animal crackers. I'm so vegan, I won't even go down the same street as a meat store. I'm so vegan. You know, and they're like, really, the most vegan. And so, I think there is a tendency that maybe some people might have to judge people. And that's what Jeff is all upset about, because he thinks that, his daughters were judged as being not vegan because they ate some honey. And they have a very popular YouTube channel themselves. And so there's quite a lot of this, going around right now. And I think, personally, that instead of fighting about these things or arguing or blaming each other, it's really important to do the inner work ourselves so that we're embodying veganism. And so that's what the resources. I have a new article that I wrote, an essay called Awakening from Materialism, Vegans as Healers. And I worked pretty hard on this to try to fine-tune it and get it just kind of right, and I think I still probably going to work it some more. But the basic idea is that veganism, in a sense, is a two-step process. And we have the only step that people actually recognize in our society is the first step, which is when we change our outer behavior so that we're no longer eating animal foods. That's sort of the main thing. And then, of course, part of that is to minimize our consumption and use of animals for entertainment and for products that are tested on animals and for clothing and so forth. And so that's all well and good. I think it's a great thing to take that first step. But the point I'm making is that there's a second step, which is changing our inner attitudes, that the herding culture, we're born into a herding culture where all of us from infancy are compelled to participate in mealtime rituals where we're eating foods that are not in our best interests, and they cause enormous suffering, not only as children, but especially later on when we develop conditions that cut our life short, that cause a lot of suffering, arthritis and diabetes and heart disease, liver, kidney disease, and cancer and so forth. But beyond the food that is not in our best interest, that is harmful to us, we're also eating attitudes. And by eating these attitudes, even if we become vegan, if we still have the attitudes, the basic orientation of the herding culture, which is toward essentially dualism, you know, seeing myself as separate from the world. And, you know, animal agriculture is really a ritualized compulsion of little kids coming into the world, and we continue it throughout our life, of separation, of domination, of the strong dominate and exploit the weak, and it's okay to own and abuse others, and this whole sense of desensitizing ourselves to the suffering we're causing others, of living more in the sort of outer material world is the only world. And that's something, I guess, that really is the heart of what I'm writing about, which is materialism. And I haven't really emphasized that before too much, but the idea that, you know, from a philosophical point of view, materialism is the philosophical belief essentially that the only thing that is actually real is physical matter. And I think that this is crippling, actually, for us as human beings, if we believe that the only reality is physical matter, then it's very difficult to find much meaning or really connect with the deeper wisdom that is our true nature. Because I think my own experience, really, just through many hours of meditation, is that when the mind gets quiet enough, we can glimpse a deeper truth that what we are is consciousness, which is not material. It actually is the source of all matter. It creates the physical manifestation. If anything, its physical manifestation is a manifestation of consciousness. And I think it's possible to understand this intuitively. And so if we're, through the herding culture, we're wounded and harmed by eating animal foods for so many generations and through so many centuries, where we learn to look at other beings merely as sacks of cement, just material objects. They're bought and sold by the pound. You know, their value is how much they weigh. You can't get more diluted and gross and completely disconnected from our true nature than that. That's and when we see a cow or a pig or a chicken or these animals, and we're just trying to fatten them up so we can get the most money from them, by their value is their weight. It's a very small step from that to looking at each other and ourselves in the same way. What is my value? In fact, I actually remember when I was getting my PhD at Berkeley and studying cost-benefit analysis models that were actually used by industries. For example, the nuclear industry is actually used in their calculation of the value of a human life. You know, because if there's a meltdown of a nuclear power plant in a certain area, and say, 2 million people get killed, And they said that, you know, the nuclear industry was asked, you know, by the government to come up with a value. How much are these lives worth? And the industry actually added up the physical weight of all of the metals in each human being's body, you know, the various minerals and metals that are in our bones and whatever, and they came up with a value of something like, you know, $1.23 or something for that's what a human that's what we're worth, you know. So therefore they could you know, they didn't have to worry about insurance. And but you know, we value ourselves by how big our, you know, how much our bank account has in it, you know, a material thing, or how many friends we have on Facebook, or, you know, all these quantitative ways of valuing ourselves and others. And it's that same basic mentality of eating animal foods has infiltrated and insinuated itself into our way of looking and seeing the world. And so this materialism, you know, it's gathered momentum for the last 10,000 years to the point where now we have created machines that can easily destroy everything that's valuable here. I mean, ecosystems, rainforests, oceans, and the webs of our culture, other cultures, languages, children. And so that technology that we've created is really in many ways a manifestation of the same way of thinking of separation. And I think we should be wary of being proud of this technology. You know, why be proud of a technology that can with nuclear weapons destroy all of us 100 times over, or technology of machines that can cut down rainforests in an acre per second? You know, these machines that we've created to rip fish out of the oceans and to hyper-confine animals and kill them very efficiently, and, you know, all these machines are to track human beings, to look into their emails, what they're writing to each other. I mean, all these technologies are technologies basically of enslavement of others and of destruction of the natural world. And our technology in many ways has become a manifestation of the materialism, which is the core of animal agriculture, of herding animals. And so it's crucial, I feel, for animal advocates to make the second step, which is to make an actual conscious effort to not only change our behavior, but to change our attitudes. And that can be harder to do, because those are not things you can really see, and except by perhaps how they play out. But the natural tendency that we still very often have to judge others, or to compete with others, or to manipulate others, or to try to influence others. And so I think that idea of wanting to change other people, even though it seems on the surface like a good thing, you know, okay, now I'm a vegan, now I want to change the world, I want to change other people. And on one level, yes, of course, you know, it's a healthy thing. If you see someone beating a dog, you want to change their behavior, right? You want to, you know, have them stop doing that. And we can certainly ask them to please stop beating the dog. But if we come after people in the sense who are eating animal foods, they're not actively beating the dog, right? They're just eating foods that come from animals. And we try to, you know, grab the fork out of their hand and say, don't you know what you're doing? And you can't do this. You know, we're only 3% of the population at the most. And so the idea that we can change others by directly trying to change them, in a sense, is a somewhat violent approach, because it has this idea that I'm right and you're wrong. And if you become like me, then you'll be a better person for the world. And there's a natural tendency in people not to want to have somebody just change them. Even though they're eating animal foods only because they're following orders that were injected into them from infancy, those have become part of the landscape of their consciousness. And so I think the second step, really, of embodying vegan living is to exemplify veganism as loving kindness and concern and respect for animals, including all animals, including human animals, including all people. We're all people here. including all expressions of life, and actually making that the foundation, making our own individual transformation the main focus of our advocacy efforts. That's, you know, that's kind of a radical statement, I guess, but I think there's an aspect in it that's very important for us to at least address, which is, you know, how effective ultimately will I be if the foundation of where I'm actually living is not congruent with what I'm trying to bring into the world. You know, Gandhi summed this up so well. I'm not sure if he exactly said it, but, you know, to be the change we want to see in the world. And I think with questioning materialism, that doesn't mean that we have to be, you know, a follower of a religion. You know, there's many, many spiritual traditions that don't have any particular deity involved. Jainism, Buddhism, Taoism, Confucianism, many strands of Hinduism, many of the indigenous traditions, they're all in a sense systems of addressing the deep mystery of life and also addressing the way we live our lives that are somewhat open-ended, you know. And I also think, you know, obviously the more deity-focused religions like Christianity and Judaism and Islam and so forth, they also can be avenues of that can help us. And but it's important to, I guess, the point I'm making is that what I'm talking about has got nothing to do with organized religion per se. Organized religion is one of the sons of the herding culture that, in many ways, is just fulfilling its mandate to enslave people further to violence and to commodification of life. So an authentic spiritual or non-materialistic expression of one's life is really, I think, to question all the stories of our society and to try to look beyond the surface level and see if there's something more in the way that I can present the message so that I become more and more like Walt Whitman said in his, that great line, you probably heard me say it, I and mine do not convince by arguments, we convince by our presence. To somehow bring our presence to bear in what we're saying and writing and doing so that it just touches people in a way where they say, yeah, I'm open to that change. And I think one of the reasons Cowspiracy is so successful is that Kip Anderson, in his own inner path, is able to tell his story in a way that people can feel the authenticity of his yearning and his message, and that just opens up everybody's hearts to the message at even a deeper level. So I think everything that we do to mature and question the materialism of our society is helpful. I am aware that there are people in the vegan movement, vegans or vegan activists, who strongly disagree with me about this. And so, you know, I'm not saying that they're wrong either. There are people who have written books saying that the only way we should advocate veganism is with rationality and science. Those are the only valid ways of bringing veganism, because if you don't, you look like you're kind of a hippie kook, a nut or something, or some kind of new age person, and that's going to hurt the whole movement. And my sense is that there's, you know, perhaps there's some truth to what they're saying, but you know there's certainly, you know, there's no questioning that being a vegan is far more, you know, rational than not being a vegan. I mean, it's a totally rational thing. I mean, we can make a very strong argument. Obviously, we're just sticking to the facts of, you know, water depletion and pollution and cruelty to animals and health, and you know, stay on that rational level and just talk facts and try to, you know, talk science. The question I have, though, is in terms of effective advocacy, what is it that really touches people? Do people go vegan just because of facts, or is it because something inside their heart opens? And what about the role of arts, of music, of painting, of poetry? You know, these are languages that go beyond rationality. They touch us at a deeper level. They're languages of intuition, of symbolism, all of which rationality really has nothing to do with, and touches at a much deeper level. And I personally think that it's much more effective because the rational mind can easily be used to defend animal agriculture. I mean, we can rationalize anything. We can, you know, we see it happening all the time as vegan people can rationalize everything. So from my point of view, if people want to stay with rationality, as that's their only way of being activists, and that's fine. I would never criticize them. I would never say, you know, don't do that. I mean, that's what they want to do. But I guess what I'm feeling is that it's not really right for them to tell me that what I'm doing is bad for the movement because I'm not being, rational. Like what I'm saying isn't rational. First of all, I think it is rational, but second of all, I don't think I have to stay within any particular, box that they approve of. And I think we really have to sort of talk about that as our movement goes forward, because this is definitely has become somewhat of an issue. Sometimes people don't want to have me speak, or will say that the world peace diet is non-rational or something like that. And there's this whole, I think, perhaps it's a fear of looking more deeply into the deeper implications of what veganism actually is. Some of the people who say this, they say we're skeptics. You know, we're skeptical, and it's a healthy skepticism. And my feeling is you're not skeptical enough. You know, you should really have to doubt and question the so-called science. I mean, science itself has become a religion, which has been co-opted in many ways by corporations. And, that's a whole other talk. But anyway, we have to, I think, be careful of holding anything up to, how do we know what is really true is true? That's the basic question of epistemology that I think no one knows the answer to that. And we should all be free to explore that ourselves. So that's my new article. It's this idea that there's a two-step process that freeing ourselves from herderism, from herding animals, from animal agriculture is also freeing ourselves internally from materialism, which means opening the door to see what are we truly, that we're not just matter, we're not just physical objects, animals are not just physical objects. What we are is infinite eternal consciousness that is of the nature of creativity, joy, and love. And that the more we understand that and allow ourselves to grow into a deeper understanding of that, our movement will become an unstoppable movement because it'll be a movement based on transformation of people, and from that we get transformation of society. We will never have a transformation of our society if the people don't change, if we don't as individuals change, and I can't change anyone else, all I can do is change myself. And that's an enormous thing. That's a huge thing. You know, I look at the people who have really done deep inner work, and I see people who have probably created more vegans and vegetarians than anybody else. You know, look at the Buddha. I mean, that movement that he, his going very deep and attaining a deep enlightenment. When I was at the farm in Tennessee, I was in a vegan community. When I was at Sung Wong Sa, I was in a vegan community, but they were vegan because they were basically influenced by Buddhism, by the Buddha's awakening, 2,500 years ago. And I, go to some meditation centers like Thich Nhat Hanh centers or Supreme Master Ching Hai centers, and these groups are influencing, thousands or millions of people to go vegan based on, I think in some ways, the leverage comes from their inner practice, from working to really embody loving kindness and creativity and caring as a, in within themselves and having, influence, in that way. So I think that in a sense is the frontier for all of us. We can all, in our way, see veganism as a questioning of materialism and as a path of transformation. So there's a couple of people that have raised their hands. Michael, it's so good to have Michael Lansfield with us. Michael is the author of a couple of books, and you have your hand up, Michael, so I'm going to unmute your phone. Here we go. Does that work? Oh, I don't know. try again here. Are you there?
Yes, I'm here, Will. Thank you.
Oh,
can
good.
You hear me?
Hi, Michael.
Can you hear me okay?
Yeah, I can hear you. Yeah, speak up a little louder, maybe, if you can.
Okay, I'll try. First, I just want to say thank you to everyone on the phones making the world a better place and who are trying to do their part to get the world and get people to go vegan. There are a few things I just want to mention. First of all, thank you to Marlene for doing what you're doing and the radio show and coming on and all that. First thing I'd like to mention is that just recently I released my second full-length book called The Lost Love. And
great.
It's a sequel, basically a sequel to the first, because it talks a little bit about the first book. And essentially how we are, like you said, Will, how we are how we have this duality within ourselves. We really, like, deep down inside, we really do love all life. But then we have this kind of, like, armor around us that is a product of our hurting culture, a product of our culture. And then we kind of say, well, yeah, I do respect and I love other animals like cows and pigs and chickens, but then I eat them as well. So why is that? And that really goes into that idea of how we become our love and our compassion has been completely hidden and suppressed within ourselves, and how we can transform the world by just reawakening the love within ourselves. So I would appreciate if everyone could get that book on Amazon or through the website weareinterconnected.com. Write a review. I would really appreciate it. It's not that pricey, and it's a very easy and short book of 120 pages. So that is that, and audiobook will be coming shortly. Now, two questions for you, Will, that people have been talking about recently. Actually, one of them is the cultured meat. What do you think about the super the company Super Meat? Is it good or bad? Your opinion on that? And do you really believe that the world will go vegan in our time? Or at least in the next lifetime. So
right. Okay. Thank you, Michael. I'll go ahead and I'll answer that question about the about Super Meat. And I just actually today had my eyes opened about that whole thing much more by this article. I'm not sure if everybody's aware of it. Like I say, it just came today, so I couldn't have it in. But I'll make a link to it in next month's resources, and I'll put it in the email I send out tomorrow that I send out to everybody on the Circle, written by a man named David Steele, who is a molecular biologist who has been on the Faculty of Medicine at the University of British Columbia, also has held faculty positions at Cornell University and Queen's University, and he's also a longtime vegan. And he wrote a really shocking article today, I guess, or recently, the last day. Well, actually... look at that. It's actually been out for a while, so that's interesting. So what he says, it came out October 14th of 2015, and what he says is that it's impossible to make these laboratory meats without a growth substance. And he says where they get it is from bovine fetal serum, which, I, as you know, if you read the article that I wrote recently on the dairy industry and abortion, where I talk about how it's standard procedure on dairies to impregnate a cow after she's given birth to four cows, and then on the fifth one, they send her to the slaughterhouse when she's about 7 or 8 months pregnant, so that after they kill her, they can open her up, and then there's a still a young calf ready to be born. and then they'll stick a long needle into the heart of the catheter, and they can pull out about a liter of bovine serum, which is very valuable for vaccines, but it's also apparently very valuable to grow the tissues. And according to him, it's never going to be possible to grow meat, including super meat, without using bovine serum. And I heard last night, actually, a podcast by a woman who said that she has written to Super Meat, the company, numerous times, at least two or three times, and asked them, are they using bovine serum, and they never answer. So this molecular biologist said it's impossible to grow lab meat without using serum. It just requires that, and so and it requires a lot of it. I mean, you know, it'll require just huge amounts. So he says that, you know, the meat alternatives that really show great promise are those like tempeh and Gardein, and, you know, we have these wonderful things coming out now that are very, very successful. And they're just totally plant-based. And so, personally, I tend to feel myself more and more moving in that direction. I never really felt that good about the lab-grown meat idea, just because I just don't see the point of it. I mean, we can create meats that now that the average person cannot tell the difference. You know, they've had expert food columnists trying to tell the difference between real chicken and plant-based chicken, and they couldn't tell the difference. So what's the reason to go to all these lengths to do this other stuff? So anyway, so I think that's how I feel about that. And then as far as whether we'll see veganism in our lifetime, I guess it depends on how long we live here. But the situation is getting, you know, very dire in some ways. I have a link here to one of the articles in the resources that for the first time there's been some climactic things happening that have never happened. The jet stream for the first time crossed the equator in June, or last month. This has really never happened. You know, there's a jet stream in the north and there's a jet stream in the south, northern hemisphere and southern hemisphere. But as climate destabilization keeps increasing, the jet stream is wobbling more and more. And for the first time, it actually just crossed the equator. The northern jet stream just screamed across and went down into the southern jet stream. And climatologists are like yelling and screaming like, this has never happened. You know, what's going to happen next? And that could lead to the complete desertification of the Brazilian, you know, rainforest. It could lead to the much quicker melting of the Arctic ice and a full-fledged global kind of catastrophe. So, I don't mean to be overly bleak in my prognostications, but I'm aware that a lot of scientists say that things are heating up fast in terms of what we're doing to the earth, to global climate and to water reserves and to biodiversity and to ocean health. The plankton are dying off, which are really the lungs of the earth, cutting down the forest. So we're under a full scale assault on planet Earth. And so, like I said in the World Peace Diet, these are the last days of eating animals. We will go vegan. You know, we will see a vegan world either, I think, in our lifetime, within, you know, the next 30 years. People will make that transition, or we will see something else, which we won't be something we'll probably want to see. I think it'll be a lot of just really devastation. That is a result of not just animal agriculture, but the mentality of animal agriculture, which I've already talked about that. You know what that is, just the exploitation of each other. And so in many ways, I think there are perhaps forces at work controlling, you know, controllers in a sense that seem to have the reins of power in terms of controlling financial institutions and banks and media, in corporations and governments, a wealthy elite, which is in many ways just continuing to push these things. But we, the people, have to take responsibility. I mean, why we have to stop eating animals, stop cooperating with the system. I mean, we could easily stop it. We could, I mean, there's no reason for them to have this kind of power. It's only because we, the people, are eating animal foods, shutting down our natural intelligence and capacities, and going along with it. So veganism, to me, is really this awakening of caring and kindness and taking responsibility for our lives and actually transforming ourselves so that we can be the human beings who are worthy of creating a society of peace and freedom and justice. To have a society of peace, freedom, and justice, and equality and sustainability requires human beings who are the ones who can create that, right? And right now, we're not. So I think we're perhaps, the imaginal cells and emerging vegans are in that happening. But so I can't answer your second question whether it will happen, but I will say that the momentum is increasing very quickly. Positive momentum also, besides the negative momentum, I think there's a lot of positive momentum, as Molly referred to. And from my point of view, just to focus on the positive as much as we can, on building the consciousness of compassion and caring, and keep contributing to that. And I think if we do, we can transform and come home to a deeper level of understanding. So thank you, Michael. I really appreciate your questions. And I encourage everyone to go to weareinterconnected.com and get a copy of The Lost Love. That's beautiful. All right, so we're getting, my time is getting away from us here. Lily has raised her hand. I want to make sure we have a chance. Hi, Lily. Are you there?
Hi, Will. Can you hear me?
Oh, good. Yes,
I
can.
Hi. My mind went blank after you talked about the cow being, you know, cut open and her baby being...
Yeah.
Terrible. Brutalized like that before. Brutalized, just totally. I just can't even imagine it. I don't even want to imagine it. But I wanted to get back to what you were actually saying about about this business of veganism being analytical and scientific rather than a transformation,
yeah,
of the heart. And of course the World Peace Diet, and by the way, thank you very much, Marlene. It's always good to hear you, and I just love Marlene. And that is actually how I got to know Will Tuttle almost 10 years ago. I listened to a public radio station, and I heard Dr. Tuttle on there. I didn't know who he was.
Yeah, so I think it's even
isn't it
a community station, I think?
It is our community station. It's been around 30 years, and I wound up, who knew that in 6 months' time I would wind up interviewing Will Tuttle right there on that station,
right.
And then had a couple of interviews with him on that station, and I thought about having my own radio station. Actually, people on World Peace Diet Sunday have said, maybe we could do this on the radio, and I think it would get out there. I don't know. We'll see. We'll see. I know that Marlene learned how to do everything, and I would have to also do that, and I have a lot going on here, as you well know. But I just wanted to say about this business of being scientific, analytical, not metaphysical. In fact, we happen to be reading The Metaphysics of Food in this week's World Peace Diet Sunday, and it's the change of the heart that made me a vegan. And this week, I want to spread some good news here. This week, I got approached twice by people who, one was very interested in my bumper stickers. One of them says, go vegan, and another one says, you gave me that sticker, Will, legalize happiness, and it has just a lot of fruits and vegetables. He says, I'm interested in your stickers. And I said, oh, are you? And nobody's ever said anything to me, but I think things are changing. And she said, yeah, I'm vegan. And I said,
Wow. And
I'm vegan too. She says, I've been a vegan now for about 9 years. And I said, well, how did you go vegan? She said, well, I saw a movie called Food Incorporated, and her eyes filled up with tears. So you see, her heart was moved. And I told her about she'd never heard of the World Peace Diet, but her heart was moved to compassion. And she said, my husband and I both saw that movie, and it wasn't a little Garberville theater. I saw it, too. And it was riveting, even though I was already vegan when I saw it. But I saw her eyes just fill up with tears and a drop just come out of her eyes. And I said, well, if you're vegan and you want to stay vegan and you want to know why to be vegan on so many other levels, the World Peace Diet is your book. And so I gave her my card. And this happened to me again up in Eureka. Someone was noticing my shopping cart and was saying, oh, you're eating healthy. And I said, I'm vegan. And she said, oh, me too. And I'm, you know, these things have not happened to me before. She said, oh, me too. And I said, oh, great. And I immediately asked, have you ever heard of the World Peace Diet? And she said, no. And so I talked to her. I gave her my card. And she's actually a member of a vegan group in Eureka. 100 people come to it. And she took a bunch of my cards and is going to pass it out. Because, you see, she's a new vegan. We had an older vegan like myself. And then we had a new vegan. And I said, if you became vegan, obviously I can see it in your eyes. You're a compassionate vegan, are you not? And she said, oh, yes, it's all about the animals. And I said, and it's all about the animals and much, much more. And the World Peace Diet turns over every stone about what it's about, and that's why I've committed my life to teaching this book. So she was, like, so interested, and it was just a good feeling. I thought two times in 1 week people have approached me. I'm usually the one who I will start a conversation with someone and then I will kind of inch my way in. People approached me, and that's new, and that's good news, and I like to stay on that positive ray, and it really is about all about personal transformation. Because if people are just doing it to be analytical, your analysis of life could change. Your analysis of everything could change with the wind. But if it's a personal transformation of the heart, a metaphysical, vibrational transformation, you will never change. You will always be a vegan, and you will never, ever change. I just want to throw in, please come to World Peace Diet Sunday. Please bring people to it. It's powerful. There are many, including Michael Anfield and Marlene, come. Please come and be a part of the conversation. I read it the first hour. The second hour, we have a conversation. And it will strengthen you, because we need to be in vegan community. And even if you're not a vegan yet, although this is for facilitators, so you probably are, but if you know people who are interested in the vegan message, the World Peace Diet has it all. And I'm going to leave it with that, but I'm totally, if my heart hadn't been completely changed, if I hadn't made a complete inside-out transformation, I wouldn't have become.
Yeah.
I guess someone muted me, but I'm gonna hang up.
You know, that was a complete, sorry, that was a complete mistake. I don't know how that happened. You said,
well, that
you
was a nice way to shut me up, Will.
No, I really wasn't. I don't know how that happened.
It's fine. I'm finished. I'm finished. But that's what the World Peace Diet, what does it say? Eating for spiritual health and social harmony. And to me, that spiritual health is what the World Peace Diet produces. Mm-hmm. And you go vegan out of that spiritual health, and it's a different life after that. It's a completely new life. And I'm going to be quiet now.
Wow. Thank you. All right. Yes, I know. It is getting time for us to wrap it up. Thanks so much, Lily. And, I definitely highly endorse the World Peace Diet Sunday. I've heard so many good things from so many different people about it as a way to develop advocacy. And also, if you know people who would like to go vegan or learn more about it, and you just want to let them know about a great supportive community for vegans, the World Peace Diet Sunday is, obviously, it's free, and you can call and be part of the conversation, and it's a wonderful group. And I and Madeline call in from time to time as well, and it's something that I think is a great thing. So thank you so much, Lily, for reminding us about that and for what you're doing. And finally, we have Marlene. I'll go ahead and unmute your phone, Marlene, because you had raised your hand again. Is there anything else you'd like to share before we begin to wrap up here?
Yes, Will. I just wanted to give a shout out to Madeline,
and that when I mentioned all the guests on Vegan Nation, that Natalyn joined you in the interviews, and I failed to mention that, so I wanted to give a shout-out to Natalyn. And to let you know that also Sophia Panetta Ochoa, who's originally from Guadalajara, Mexico, who's an MD in Houston, Texas, she's also in the archives, and I think it's significant because of her Meet Your Future, which is all about the environment, health, and animals, coming from an MD, and that her name is Sophia, which is all about your bringing Sophia Rising into our consciousness. Thank you. That's all.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Thank you so much, Marlene. Right, great. Okay, so, we're at that time, and there's, you know, always more things that we would like to discuss. I was hoping to get to, but thank you, Michael, for helping me to get to the super meat question, because I did want to cover that briefly as well. I do want to mention that we have coming up a few events between now and next gathering, and which will be wait a second here. Okay, so the third Thursday, is going to be in August. It'll be August 18th. We'll be getting together again, and just so anyone, if anyone's interested, I also wanted to mention that in Cincinnati in early September, basically Friday, Saturday and Sunday, we'll be doing a full World Peace Diet Facilitator training, a live training. Madeline and I will be in Cincinnati, and it'll be together with Mark and Anna as well. So put that on your calendars if you're interested in doing a whole training, or if you know someone who might be interested. It's always nice to get together, and so that'll be happening. You can go to our website, worldpeacediet.com, and just click on upcoming schedule, and you'll see the events that we have happening. And what else? Is there anything else? Just basically just to encourage everyone to look through the resources that I put up on the website that are I work on for the whole month. It's a lot of very interesting things have been happening, which I didn't have a chance to get to. But you can see the articles and interviews that I've been involved with. Lee Fulkerson, who is the producer of Forks Over Knives, did an interview, which is on Plant Care Nation's website. He said it's an interview that's gotten more listens than any other that he's ever done. And it came out really well, so we have a link to that. Also, the new documentary film that we heard, Vegan Everyday Stories. And also, there's a new documentary from Greece called Food for Thought. I mean, that'll be coming out with English subtitles pretty soon. And then also, Lorena Mukhe, her Ethical Choices program is expanding quickly. There's still actually room. If any of you are interested in perhaps considering that, they're still hiring educators to go into high schools to bring the vegan message. They'll be hiring for another couple of months, I think. And great video. I highly recommend called Green Gold. It's a very important documentary by John Liu. He's from China, on healing ecosystems. You've probably heard, I think, of Alan Savory, who talks about how if we graze animals, that's healthy for ecosystems, when actually it's very obvious that it's devastating. But John Liu shows how by planting trees and keeping animals out of ecosystems, I mean goats and sheep and cows, letting them heal, he's brought back ecosystems and healed communities, and it's just amazing to see the power of a vegan lifestyle in transforming our world. And his video I think is really shows that a lot. He doesn't come off as being a vegan, but that's what he's doing. He's totally not allowing grazing of animals, which is what's devastating so many parts of the world. And there's a lot of other actually interesting things here. China's plan to reduce meat consumption by 50% is huge. And this Michael Greger's video that we may be like plants and use photosynthesis ourselves, that actually light goes right through our skin, and that we have cells within our body that are photosynthetic, that we can actually generate, like plants can do photosynthesis. Apparently human beings potentially can also get energy directly from the sun. That's kind of a thing that we've probably heard various places, but it's interesting to see mainline science now starting to talk about that. So anyway, there's quite a few other fascinating things. Growing food is the single most impactful thing you can do in a rigged system. So, you know, the more I think we can grow our own food, the more we can help transform our society. And I think that is part of the whole thing. And this doctor in New York, I think he's in Northern New Jersey, has become the first MD who actually now grows food and uses and gives people food as prescriptions. So he's become the farmer doctor and gives people food, and he's found it's become a huge success. So there's so many wonderful things happening. And this, and also, of course, there's many different threads to this whole thing, but I think we can see that there are many positive changes happening. Madeline and I will be on the way through New York State and Pennsylvania and Ohio and Illinois, Indiana, Michigan, Wisconsin over the next month and a half, and then zooming across to Denver and Salt Lake City and Reno and back in California by October. So if you're in any of those areas and you'd like us to come by and do a lecture or come to one of our events, please let us know. Stay in touch. And it's always an honor to be able to participate in this movement with you wonderful people. I really appreciate the efforts that each and every one of you are making. It's time for us to wrap up the call. So we'll just close like we began. We're just taking a short moment and, again, in our hearts, giving thanks for the spirit of love that is radiating into the infinite web of relations from our heart into the world, and that we are also touched by each other and by others in our example and our inspiration, and that we understand that no effort is ever lost, that every effort we make to be kind and loving, to become more aware, to transform our relationships with those who are close to us and those who are in our world in any way, that all of those efforts contribute. No effort is ever lost, that all of the accumulated thought power and feelings that we have build a momentum of kindness and caring that touches and encourages others in the same way. So we give thanks for this precious opportunity that we have to be together and to be part of this movement. I look forward to our next event in August. And in the meantime, go forth and multiply the message of compassion for all life. Enjoy your view this beautiful summer if you're in the Northern Hemisphere. We'll be doing actually a Skype presentation also in Perth. It's coming up. I'll be recording that in a couple of weeks. So I'm thinking of our friends. And remember, this whole thing is recorded. It's all archived. All of the World Peace Diet Circle calls are archived and can be listened to later. So much love to you all. I'm going to go ahead and play the closing music. It's the short piece dedicated to these beautiful beings that I just saw running around outside the RV where we're parked in Cape Cod yesterday. There was three adults and about 11 or 12 little young ones, wild turkeys.